This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from San Francisco. Come along and join me as we visit with Spud Hilton. Spud, for the last 19 years, has been a staffer at the San Francisco Chronicle. Hi, Spud.
Hi, Tom.
You're now on to new and better things.
Well, I'm on to things where I'm my own boss and I get to pursue some projects that I didn't used to pursue. The nice thing about it is that for most of that 19 years, in the travel section, I basically covered everywhere in the world but San Francisco. I never got to look at my own backyard.
And how long have you been a citizen in San Francisco?
I've been a citizen here for about 26 years. Thank God for rent control. Been here a long time. But when you live in a place, you tend to take those things for granted.
You're seeing San Francisco with a new lens, aren't you?
I totally am. I'm applying some of the principles of almost 20 years as a travel writer to my own backyard, which is counterintuitive, but I'm finding tremendous things that I didn't know about because it was my backyard and I always figured I'd get around.
As you're now coming back in and looking with a fresh eye at San Francisco, what do you see that you did not see before?
Well, I'll tell you, Tom, and it's a fresh example. Literally yesterday, I went to go meet somebody in the Presidio, which is a place that I believe is phenomenal. It's a town within a town. If it were anywhere else in the world other than inside San Francisco, it would still be a destination. But as it turns out, I was supposed to meet somebody there, and then I started wandering, and then I found out that the bridge goes over the tunnels that they made, and you can now go over to the Crissy Field wetlands.
Walk right across.
You can walk right across, and the wetlands is nothing like I remember it. It's wonderful. It's preserved. There's all these great areas, boardwalks, paths, bike paths, everything like that.
And you have to remind yourself you're in the middle of San Francisco.
Exactly. It's not that hard to remind yourself that you're in San Francisco because you look over to the left and there's this great big giant thing called a bridge. And yesterday it was beautiful out. It was bright orange. I mean, it was international orange, which means pretty much red, but it was gorgeous yesterday and it was such a great view. I had to sort of say, wow, I need to bring other people down here because I didn't know it was like this.
And there's some other iconic touristy destinations that, in spite of that, I love walking it. I just spent an hour walking Chinatown. I love it. You have Fisherman's Wharf, total iconic. And then one that gets some bad press when you mention the Tenderloin. And yet, we both know it from a close-up. Look, it's a different place than one would imagine.
It really is. I mean, every city, every major city worth anything, has a neighborhood that people look down on as undesirable, as beleaguered, as, wow, you just don't send anybody there because, you know, who knows who will get mugged or knifed or you'll run into crack dealers, whatever.
Prostitution, drugs, homeless, end of story.
Right. And that's essentially it. That's our neighborhood where people make that assumption no matter what. Now, what they forget is everything goes in cycles. And this particular neighborhood not only has amazing history, and I mean it's serious history of this city.
On the heels of the gold rush?
Absolutely. Close to on the heels of the gold rush. Figure it was already there and built. But when they shut down the Barbary Coast, for instance.
Shut down, that was from police raids.
Right. Actually, I should even move back some. When the 06 quake came and the fires afterwards, every single building except one was burned to the ground because it was all wooden buildings. So they decided to build in large stone buildings, and to get the economy of scale, they made them larger and residential and everything like that. Well, that changed everything going forward. But what it meant is that a lot of the things that happened in this particular neighborhood are all the things that we assign to what we know of San Francisco. San Francisco's character, whether it's the bawdy, rollicking prostitution or the gambling or the graft or the music, the incredible music scene that was there during the 50s and 60s. The Haight-Ashbury is great, but not that many people recorded there. They recorded down at, you know, at Hyder Studios.
You're talking Grateful Dead.
Yeah, Grateful Dead, Carlos Santana. All those guys didn't necessarily record in the Haight-Ashbury. That was just where you hang out. They recorded in the Tenderloin. And they still are. They're still doing that there. Some of the 1950s jazz clubs down there basically had everybody who you would love played there at some point. But you don't think of that when you think the Tenderloin today.
And the music scene never died.
Right. Music scene never died. There's some of it still there. It ebbs and flows. That's the whole point, is neighborhoods ebb and flow. They get better, they get worse. What I like about the Tenderloin, among other things, is that it's interesting. San Francisco, quite frankly, and maybe I'll lose my membership card, but San Francisco, quite frankly, has neighborhoods that no one talks about. Why? Because they're nice. They're just straight out boring. There's nothing about them that you would really comment on. And yet, you have this neighborhood here that historically has been well worth commenting on its entire history, because it's always had interesting history of some sort. It's tough to see the past and the future when all you look at is now.
Context is everything.
Context is everything. I think a lot of people only look at now. They look at the homelessness, they look at the drug situation, things like that. And I get that. I totally get that, especially if you're somebody on a vacation and you're coming here and you're doing a quick hit, that's might be all you see. But if you make a little bit of an effort to find out a little bit more about the place and some of the places that you can visit that teach you this rich history and the places that what's going to be a rich future, it's well worth doing.
Right now we're at the Hilton, San Francisco Union Square. Out the back door is the Tenderloin. If we had a little extra time and you took me for a walkabout, where would you take me? Where would we go?
Well, I got to tell you, the Tenderloin Museum would probably be my starting point. This is a wonderful, very petite-sized museum that's incredible with the information that covers a lot of what I've been talking about. They do a terrific job putting it all in context, that context you were talking about. They also do walking tours of the neighborhood that you could take. They have, you know, art walks and things like that that are terrific. But I think I would probably start there. And then I would try to hit some of the hotels. Honestly, it was that neighborhood was entirely residential, but it was big building residential, which is why it drew in a lot of singles, single women, single men, white collar workers. And that changed the whole nature of the city, because that brought in a whole lot of entertainment, brought in a lot of other things that you wouldn't have ordinarily seen.
Does that describe single room occupancy, basically?
Yes, that's essentially most of what that's become. A lot of these edifices had their, or stayed the same. Some of them were, you know, converted inside to be smaller SROs, because you don't have to have a kitchen, or you might not have to have a bathroom because it's down the hall somewhere. That was the convenience factor of single room occupancy, but resident occupancy. But the buildings themselves, the edifices of these once great hotels and these once great nightclubs and things like that. I'll give you an example. There was an absolutely terrific club, dinner club, called Blanco's at one point.
When was it?
I think we're talking 30s, 40s, something like that. It could have been earlier, but I'm not sure. I didn't catch the date on that. But it's advertised in their little advertisement that they have on the wall at the museum as San Francisco's gayest dinner and supper club. But it wasn't about that kind of gay. It was
very, very festive.
Exactly. Well, that place is now the Great American Music Hall. That place now is, it was historic then and it's historic now. That type of thing is a great symbol that you need to take. Is at one point it was this, then it fell into disrepair, and now look at it. It's a shining example. So I think we need to look at more of those places that are preserved for a reason, that you can actually say there is a future here for interesting things that are more than just the homeless problem and things like that.
Let's talk live music for a moment, because San Franciscan friends love coming there. There are venues where you have live music.
There are still great venues. I got to be honest, I'm still working my way into my own backyard, because I used to absolutely go to live music in whatever country I was in at the time. And I'm still becoming familiar with here. But of course, you know, you have the Great American Music Hall. You have a few other terrific smaller venues. The Phoenix Hotel is a joie de vivre property. At some point decided to take it back to its sort of olden days when everybody who played at the Great American Music Hall would stay there. And we're talking Jimi Hendrix, and we're talking, you know, the Doors and the Dead and everybody else. And they've sort of re-brought back that mid-century modern, but also 60s vibe. And it's wonderful. It's a great place to hang out. I don't know how much live music they have, but there's also the Black Cat. And in history, you have to be careful with San Francisco because there's been a couple of different Black Cats, and some of them were the same people, and some were like the Black Cat Cafe, things like that. But the Black Cat is a wonderful jazz club, very intimate setting that makes you feel like this could be any era. And that's one of the things I love about San Francisco is you can find yourself somewhere and not be sure whether or not it's the 40s or the millennium. Also, the Piano Fight Bar seems to be popular, but I haven't had a chance to really spend any time there yet.
That's because you're a newcomer.
I'm pretty much, I am. I love being a tourist in my own town. I know tourist is a four-letter word to some people, and I completely reject that. Because any city I'm in, I love doing the touristy stuff. I do the other stuff too, but I love doing the touristy stuff. I love doing the touristy stuff here. Because I think it's important to remind ourselves that there's a reason some of these things are so popular. Because they're great. Alcatraz is great. You talked about it yourself. But I'm reacquainting myself with my own city, and that live music scene is something I'm trying to catch up on.
One more that I find fascinating, San Francisco friends rave about the multi-ethnicity of the dining venues in and around the Tenderloin.
Well, yeah. And as I understand it, because that property area was sort of on the skids in the late 70s. And San Francisco, for obvious reasons, had a giant influx of Laotian, Cambodian, and Vietnamese.
And bottom line, this is the only place where they could afford to do a startup.
The only place they could afford to be. And they did, and they just filled up a lot of the shops, created restaurants, and it's one of the more vibrant scenes, although very little of it is what I would consider a dining scene. You know, we're not talking cloth napkins. We're talking this is a great place to get
pho. It might be a hole in the wall.
Right, exactly. A hole in the wall that's great for pho or, you know, Thai food. It's a great scene because something happened, because history happened. History is one of those big, giant rock polishers. It's a rough and tumble thing that will take almost any person, place, or culture, and just jumble it up, and not necessarily polish it, but it will change. And San Francisco, especially the Tenderloin, is, to my view, has had more rock polishings than a lot of other places.
A work in progress today.
Exactly.
When I mention the word Tenderloin neighborhood, what first comes to your mind?
I think to a lot of people, it's the downtrodden nature of it. But honestly, if you do a little research, and, you know, people have done research, it's just not as widely popularized. I gotta say it, it's the sins of the city. The sins of this city, and I don't mean necessarily the terrible things, but the things that make culture interesting and fiery. The sins of the city can all be charted through the Tenderloin. You know, when the city burned to the ground, it all burned to the ground. There's only one building left standing. When the Barbary Coast, our rollicking, prostitution-laden area, basically was shut down in like 1912, what happened was it all moved wholesale right into the Tenderloin. When that eventually got shut down in 1917 or so, which they did with a piece of little piece of legislation that said that women who were unaccompanied could not actually go into a drinking establishment by themselves. So you ended up with a whole lot of drinking establishments that didn't have any women in them, and which, you know, who wants that?
Well, deal breaker.
Yeah, it's kind of a deal breaker for a lot of different kinds of bars. But when 1920 came along, you had what? Prohibition. And when prohibition kicked in, basically, all that stuff that was being regulated before just stopped being regulated. And speakeasies were everywhere. And once again, the sin of the city, the lawlessness of the city, where was it? It was almost entirely in the Tenderloin because it was set up for that. Eventually, when prostitution came and was shut down, you had gambling. Wholesale gambling. I mean, a whole lot of folks came in and sort of took over the scene. And that went on for a long time and found out that not only they were making $80 million a year by our numbers, They also figured out that at least a million of that a year, by their numbers, was going to politicians to make sure that they could continue that. So you have San Francisco's greed, you have its lust, you have its avarice, you have all these great things.
Sounds like movie script.
Yeah, it kind of does. Nobody bothers to look that close at the Tenderloin, but its history says something about it. And again, a lot of people would say, are these the things you really want to publicize? But at the end of the day, they're the interesting things. I could go out to the sunset and look around, and I could spend a week there and not find anything to talk to anybody about. And yet, the Tenderloin has this amazing history. It's a fiery history, and you can chart it. You can chart the sins of this city through that history.
I think Spud and I are going to do a series. Next time, we'll do part two, the installment, Sins of the Cities. I love it.
Sounds like a whole new show.
It is. We've been visiting with Spud Hilton in San Francisco. I'm Tom Wilmer. Thanks, Spud.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.